The following presentation is brought to you by God Discussion. For a schedule of upcoming shows, please visit www.goddiscussion.net. Belief in a cruel God makes a cruel man. Thomas Paine. The way to see by faith is to shut the eye of reason. Benjamin Franklin. The question before the human race is whether the God of nature shall govern the world by his own laws, or whether priests and kings shall rule it by fictitious miracles. John Adams. It is perfectly evident to my mind that there exists a necessary, eternal, supreme, and intelligent being. This is no matter of faith, but of reason. Voltaire. God gave us reason, not religion. This belief is known as deism. The World Union of Deists, which brings you this podcast, is an international organization dedicated to promoting the message of deism.
Deborah here, trying to fix problems. Our host isn't here. I'm going to call Tim Wingate right now, and then hopefully we could get Jason's phone number. Bob, if you're in the chat room, send me a PM so I can call Jason and Dr. Henry, but let's see if we could get Tim in right now.
Greetings.
Greetings. Don't you love this kind of stuff?
Oh, you know, it best laid plans of mice and men, so to speak. But, I got a hold of him real quick until somebody else was calling him, and I let him go. But he was telling me it was something about some kind of upgrade. It was telling him he needed to do or something. So, anyway.
I'm putting out in the chat room for either Bob or maybe if you have his number, if you could send me a PM and I can call him from the switchboard.
Yeah,
here.
Hang on. Just hang on. I got to look it up on this phone because I was so much in a hurry doing this, I didn't. So hang on. Let me see if it'll work. Are we still connected?
We're still connected.
All right, good. Now, I'm going to... You might hear some beeping as I run through my caller ID. See if I can get a hold of him here.
Exactly. And Bob is in the chat room.
I have it written down, but I don't have it right in front of me. Okay, here
I understand.
We
have everything on electronic devices. Here. We can't find anything. Bob, you're in the chat room.
All right, hang on. I'm
a PM of the guest.
I'm sorry, what's that?
I'm asking Bob to send the PM of the guest while you look up.
I got it. I just sent it to you on your, that message thing with you and me. I'm not familiar with this little system. When you said PM, I went to Facebook, but it wouldn't let me message you there. Yeah, what is it?
Weird.
Open message history, or how do you do the message? I don't see it.
Yeah, you just, in the chat room... I'm logged in as co-host, and so if you click my name as co-host...
Oh, if I click the co-host, it gives me the option. Got it. All right.
Yeah.
We've got our own little window up right now, so
Bob Johnson,
it'll work out.
Here, if you could do that, send me a message.
Yeah, for Henry's number?
Yeah.
I think
and
that's
I'll just call
to be
everybody.
Able to get a hold of him, because I'm sure he's wondering what's going on. And
okay, Bob's got Jason, so I can call Jason right now.
Good. Good.
And then Bob says he doesn't have Henry's number, so okay.
Oh.
All right, well, let me. All right, there's somebody holding here. This might be Jason. Hold on. Hey, is this Jason?
Yes, this is.
Oh, good. Okay.
We got two out of three.
Right. Do you want me to call you back so it's not long distance for you?
Who, me?
Yes.
Yeah, can you see this number?
I can. And Bob just sent it, and then I will call
you. Know what? I'm owing to pay the money. Why don't you call up...
let me call you right back, because it's free from here.
Okay, all right.
Just a second, let me write it down.
Is it the same one I gave you?
Yeah, I think so. And then,
okay.
Jason, we'll need Henry's number.
Henry's.
Right,
yeah.
I've got his number,
I'm
too. You want me,
right
want me to give you that number, too?
Well, not over the air.
Hold on.
Okay, folks.
All right,
well,
Timothy, you can just talk and entertain
me. Can I blab? I'll blab for a while. Sure.
It looks like I'm going to have. Okay. Why don't
you
blab for a
while? Everybody, welcome to the wonderful world of internet radio. I'm not even sure if we should call it radio anymore, unless it's actually transmitted by radio waves. I guess it would be, because internet isn't just all cable driven. It is microwave. I mean, after all, I mean, you know, the NSA needs to be able to listen in on everything, right? Ha! Think they'll enjoy the discussion tonight? I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I know Jason's put a lot of work into this and a lot of discussion with our guest, Henry Jones, who on the World Union of Deists website, www.deism.com, and that's DEISM.com. We do have the interview. I did a series of three interviews with Henry Jones about his book, and we got into some discussions, and Jason apparently liked that enough so much that he thought we should continue this, because one of the important things about the issue of morality and where morals come from is that how it ends up reflecting in law. We are a nation of laws, as they tell us, as they try to tell us. We've been indoctrinated to believe this kind of thing. But yet we see the dilemma and the problem, the hypocrisy and contradiction of laws seemingly broken by an elite class who are able to get away with things, apparently. What laws, you know, what is law? And what does law and morality have in common, and how are they separated? So there's a lot of little nuances and some very important issues dealing with morality, how laws are formed. In fact, there's a fairly famous quote by Ambrosius Macrobius Theodosius. Now, I know most of you probably have no idea who I'm talking about, but he was actually a Roman philosopher. He wrote in the 5th century or so, and he wrote a book series, if you will, or a large volume called Saturnella. And it's a dialogue in 7 books. And it deals with an evaluation of Virgil. If you don't know who Virgil is, I know it's ancient history, right? Well, you know, this whole issue about morality is ancient history. It's all about ancient history, because people have been arguing about morality, even before Plato and Socrates.
Hi, Tim.
And there's, yay, Jason, giving
right,
a little bit of a lead-in for you.
I appreciate that, and I apologize to all the listeners out there. I had some computer trouble, and as best I can figure it out, Blog Talk Radio doesn't work unless I have it connected directly to the wire here on my computer, and I can't get that done. I was holding off to get that done tomorrow because I thought that maybe the cable company might mess up the computer, but I guess I should have the cable company come today.
What do you mean by wire?
Now,
you mean hardwired?
Yeah, well, now I got wireless internet.
I'm on wireless, Jason, and it works.
Okay, well, I guess we should deal
internet.
With morality now and deal with computers later.
Exactly.
The immorality of computers. That's what it is.
You hear me?
Okay.
Thou shalt not compute.
Okay, you guys go ahead.
You hear
Henry,
me okay?
Dr. Henry.
All right, do we have Henry there?
We hear you, Henry.
I'm on a wireless, also a cell phone.
Yeah, I don't think wireless has anything to do with it.
Okay.
It's your connections, your components there, Jason, that need to be synchronized. That's it. And maybe the cable guy tomorrow can help you with it all.
Yeah, I'll give it a whirl. Right. Anyways, I haven't heard what Tim said. I want to thank Tim and Deborah for coming to the rescue. I want to thank Henry for being here. And I'm just going to start over here with what I've written. Hello,
well, would
everyone.
You like to know what I talked about, what I said?
Well, sure, why not?
I'll give it to you in a nutshell.
Okay.
The discussion on morality is ancient history. It started a long, long time ago, even before Socrates and Plato. And I just used the quote of a 5th century Roman philosopher by the name of Ambrosius Macrobius. And basically he said that good laws have their origins in bad morals.
An interesting assertion.
Well, the point being is that law and morality, law claims to be moral and derive from morality. And that's why one of the reasons that this discussion is important, understanding about morality, where it comes from, especially from a deistic point of view, and how it relates to laws and our contemporary societies, ancient laws, old laws, even new laws. And that's pretty much it. So it's all yours, pal.
Sounds good.
Take her away.
Well, it's ours. It's ours. And as usual, there is Tim Wingate, who has a doctorate in theology from a Protestant Christian seminary and was the pastor of two Protestant Christian congregations. That was before he became a heretic and a deist like me. Back in the day, I received a master of theology from an Eastern Orthodox Christian seminary and then became an Eastern Orthodox Christian priest. My other co-host is Dr. Henry Jones, a psychiatrist with over 40 years of experience working with clients one-on-one. Henry is a deist and the author of the book Psychological Evolution, The Invention of Evil. Today, as Tim pointed out, we are going to begin to discuss the topic of deism and morality. I predict that this discussion will last for many episodes. That is okay, though, because deism and morality are fundamental ideas that we humans need to understand in order to make the world as sane, good, and happy as possible. Recently on 60 Minutes, there was a segment on morality entitled Born Good, Babies Help Unlock the Origins of Morality. And I've got the web address and stuff like that, but it's just easier to Google Born Good, Babies Help Unlock the Origins of Morality. It was about how researchers are testing human babies to determine if they are good, evil, or just neutral. The 60 Minutes segment suggested at least 5 conclusions. 1, babies like creatures who help. 2, babies dislike creatures who hurt. 3, babies like creatures who are like themselves. 4, babies dislike creatures who are not like themselves. 5, being unfair, including being bigoted, can be overcome, at least to an extent, through moral education. Anyway, Henry and I were discussing this 60 Minutes segment, and we came up with some good questions. What is morality? Why do we need it? Are we born good, evil, or neutral? How is good morality acquired? What I want to do is have Henry answer these questions one at a time, with Tim and various callers interjecting their insights. You listeners out there can all call in at 914-338-0452 or 888-238-8529. Please use only the 888 number for a quick phone call because it costs God Discussion more money than the 914 number. And I'm hoping that Deborah will be manning the phones behind the scenes because I can't use my computer at all on this show. if you can't get through tonight, it's not because I don't want you to talk. Please try again next month. So, Henry, Dr. Jones.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What, in your opinion, is morality?
Well, morality is the probably the most important topic in the world today because the world is trying to tear itself apart. We have now reached the capacity from the standpoint of our physical universe, our knowledge of physics and the material world to create weapons of mass destruction that can literally destroy our world. And yet if you look at our moral situation, how much we've progressed, or rather we have not progressed, we're still 6,000 years behind the times, you might say, that if we don't get a handle on the moral aspect, the social science aspect of human existence, we're going to destroy ourselves. So it's an enormously important topic. In my book, I explain that the purpose of religion, the purpose of theism, is to create slaves. And to create slaves, you have to...
I noticed you said theism, not deism. Theism is faith-based and deism is reason-based. Would you agree with that, Henry?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So religion, which is based on theism, is the means by which we amputate the natural morality that humans have, that babies have, in order to rob them of their property and turn them into slaves. If we define property as a person's life and everything contained within his skin, his organs, his energy, his brain, and also his mind, his thoughts, his innovations, his creations, and then all of the stuff that he creates and needs and uses, we have three types of property. We have the primordial property, which is his life. We have his primary property, which is his thoughts and innovations and creations. And we have his secondary property, which is the things that he has. And if we want to enslave people, it's because we want to gain access and control over their property. And if their morality stands in the way of our being able to enslave them, then it's morality that has to be destroyed. So in order for us to discuss morality, we have to, first of all, break it down into whether we're talking about a group of people who have been subject to mind trauma and who have been who have experienced a destruction of their natural morality, and those who have not, the people who have been raised in religion and who have had their true natural morality destroyed, then they have to turn to some sort of legalistic or some sort of memorized or ingrained, didactically taught system of morals.
All right, let's stop for a minute, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So would you say maybe there's two types of morality? One might be what people believe is right and wrong, and the other one might be what really is right and wrong.
So are you asking, is there absolute morality versus relative morality?
I'm also hoping to get a clear definition of what morality is. Is morality what people believe is right or wrong?
Morality is the absence of coercion.
Okay.
It's very simple. If there's no coercion involved, then it is not immoral.
All right. So
coercion.
If I want to say wear a green shirt instead of a red shirt, and no one's coercing me, I choose the green shirt, that's moral.
Yeah, there's no amoral aspect or immoral aspect to your choice of shirt.
But if somebody tries to force me from stealing a video game from Walmart, that's immoral.
Yes.
Well, would you stealing it be immoral, or the person forcing you be immoral? If you do something under coercion that's immoral, but you have a choice to accept the punishment or the negative consequences from not doing what they said to do.
Well, the application of coercion to your decision, where you can't make decision in the absence of coercion, is what makes it an immoral decision.
All right. I think Tim, do you understand this?
Let me just see if Henry will agree with this statement, and if not, he can tell us why. Henry David Thoreau said this: if the machine of government is of such nature that it requires you to be the agent of injustice to another, then I say, break the law.
Yeah, the law can be moral or immoral. If it requires coercion, which most of them do, then they're immoral on the face of it. When you vote to put people into office that will go out and force your neighbors to live the way you want them to live, there's force there. That is immoral. Most laws are immoral. The state is
okay. Can you name a law that is moral?
Come again?
Well, you said most laws are immoral. Can you name a law that is moral?
Well, probably can't. If you state that thou shalt not kill, that's a moral statement. I mean, that's a good thing to say, right? I mean, it's a good principle. If you have a law that you should not commit murder, that's a good law.
Okay.
Because it's echoing, because the law, a good law is a good law because it's echoing good morals.
Right.
Is that right?
Right.
I mean, we're at this point, we're not debating or discussing, even though I know where you're coming from, the issue of legislation, as Lysander Spooner defined it, as opposed to natural law or natural morals. So the issue, though, is what I raised earlier, just a few minutes ago, was the difference between, well, first of all, is there an absolute morality and a relative morality? That's what I meant. Absolute morality versus relative morality. And
well,
if
say,
there is, where do they come from? How you tell them apart?
Well, there certainly is. An absolute morality is the one that we've been talking about, which amounts to the non-aggression principle. This is something that the infant learns in the course of his experience with nature or with reality or with deism, however you wish to conceptualize that. The relative morals come in when you have the man-made morality that religions teach, like thou shalt not kill. Then you have, well, it's okay to kill if it's a war and you're a soldier. It's okay to kill if some bad person's committed a crime and has been found guilty or something. You get into all kinds of relativity with morals once you bring in the religious influence. Because the state has to modify. The state is the institutionalization of evil. And so the state is constantly involved in immoral behavior. Or, I mean, that's what it exists for. So it bends morality and changes it to suit itself. I mean, taxation is clearly theft, and warfare is clearly murder. But on the other hand, they have to produce this artificial morality that says the citizen should not do any of this on their own. They shouldn't steal and they shouldn't kill unless the ruling elite give them the go ahead and direct the activity. So you get into the relative morality when you get into the theist or the religious influence that is so relevant in today. But the natural morality, where the child takes his needs urge the child to seek certain things, and the child learns that you don't take it away from someone else, the non-aggression principle, that you're violating the principle of taking someone else's property. And it's a very fundamental law. Many animals are able to learn the concept that you don't cross over in someone else's territory and take what is theirs. So morality is actually quite simple. It simply means that everyone has 100% control of 100% of their property 100% of the time. But you can't make slaves out of people with that philosophy. You've got to destroy that morality so that you can gain control of their property. No use having a slave if you don't control his life, his actions, and the property he produces. So the whole idea behind theism is to destroy the natural morality and the opportunity to learn a natural morality. And once the mind trauma of the theist experience is produced in the child, then you give him a list of rules that good slaves should follow. And that's what most people associate with the word morality. The Ten Commandments are the ones that the Israelis had before that, which was the 600 commandments. Or other religions have other commandments, but they.
Jason has his own list.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah, well, one of the nice things is about deism is that we don't have to agree on everything to be deists.
That's right.
I think all three of us believe that we should base all of our beliefs on reason, and reason leads us to conclude that God exists. But you know, I get the feeling that Henry and I will disagree maybe on the importance of government and maybe even on the importance of moral education. Do you think ideally, Henry, that there should be no government?
Absolutely. I think the government is the source of many, many of our problems, most of our problems, because it is working 24/7 creating problems, stealing people's property, giving it to other people, trying to redistribute people's property, trying to control people's properties, particularly their lives. I think the state is the instrument for most of the evil in the world today.
Well, I think that you bring up a lot of good points, Henry, but from my point of view, I think they need modification. I think anarchy is a very unpleasant state, and we see that in Somalia right now. When there's no government, you know, controlling the worst impulses of people, you have people blatantly kill each other because people aren't necessarily by nature very good at working out their grievances or sharing what they need to share.
So why would you want people like that in a position of monopoly? Of the monopoly of the use of force, the monopoly of the determination of what is good and evil. Why would you want people like that in that position?
Well, I would rather live in the United States than live in Somalia.
Well, that's you do, and there's no issue. There's no issue there. I'm not that familiar with Somalia to argue against that as an example, but you're using that as an example of anarchy. Or an anarchistic society.
Right.
Iceland, in many ways, has been in the past anarchistic, and I'm not sure that you're using anarchy in the same way. Let's just put it this way: anarchy is not chaos. An anarchist society is one of multiple sovereigns voluntarily associating with each other for the common good, for their own good as well as others.
And for that,
that's basically
and that
what an anarchist society is.
Okay, well, I've heard of political anarchy. Is that what those people in, say, Europe who you know occasionally do assassinations and things are working toward?
Usually people who do bad things like that who are. They may adopt the term anarchist. You've got the people who wear the black shirts and the black masks and back, you know, were throwing bricks through the windows in Seattle. They were supposedly. Usually the term anarchist or anarchy is a pejorative term used by the statists to put down the concept of a stateless society. So I tend to agree with Henry on the problem that the state has caused quite a bit of problem, and that the state ultimately, or the people who run the state, tend to be just as bad, if not worse, because there's a whole study of status or politics. It's called ponerology. It deals with the study of evil and how that those who gravitate toward power, state power, tend to be sociopaths, if not psychopaths, or both. And
well,
these
well,
are the people
let's,
who...
Let's hear
so,
from
so, you know,
Henry. Let's
yeah.
hear from Henry, and we'll get back to morality very quickly. I was just curious, Henry, how would you like to see a national area organized? Like, you know, suppose... You know, you could bring a bunch of settlers to a continent. How would you set up the way they live?
I wouldn't set it up. I would leave them free to pursue. I mean, I don't want to be a dictator. I would leave them free to pursue their interest, and if I saw that they had something I wanted, I'd try to trade with them. Something I had, I'd try to persuade them to swap things with me or... but I would try to I would try not to fall back on my savagery and use coercion on them, and I would hope that they would do the same regarding me.
What would you do if say a group of them got together and started like trying to take your stuff without your permission, maybe even you know threatening your loved ones?
Well, I would. See if there were other people like me, and maybe we could organize to stop them from doing that.
Okay. So do you think that might be the beginning of some kind of, you know, maybe very limited government?
Well, no, because once we got them stopped, we would not continue in existence. We would disband and go about our purposes.
Maybe I could help out here a little bit, Henry. We should not make government and statism synonymous. Maybe it should not be that way. Maybe government is just the agreement amongst free people to how they're going to associate and conduct themselves in society, whatever that structure is. What's happened, because
yes,
I'm just thinking about the preamble, you know, to the Declaration of Independence where Jefferson says that, you know, that there's life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, you know, is amongst the rights. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And the next sentence is the most important one. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. So if you have a group of people who voluntarily associate together and create a structure to help ensure their rights, that's not a problem, as long as it's
right.
the consent of the governed.
Right. Until the state initiates force. I ordinarily don't call that a government, but that's fine for us to do that. If the organization is organized to stop the initiation of force against us, then that's fine. It's when the state itself becomes the coercer. In fact, my definition of a state is an organization that claims to protect property by coercing the owner of the property to use and pay for its services.
The old protection racket.
Yeah.
The old
protection
racket.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the state uses force to go out and do its business.
Right.
And one of the hardest principles to comprehend, but it's just as true as gravity is true, and that is that force and coercion do not solve problems. It's very hard to get, you know, if we've been brought up as a theist, as a child, it's very hard to get that through our head, that force and coercion does not solve a problem. It stops other people from using force on us, but still it does not solve the problem in a positive way.
Well, maybe we could. I'd like to try and lead this back toward, you know, the discussion on morality, and that is, you bring up quite a bit, you know, talking about theism, and you and I discussed this pretty deep when we were having the shows that you and I did. And maybe you could share with that some of that idea about how theism, which comes from basically it's a revealed religion, how that uses a form of absolute morality that's basically made up and then uses the force and coercion, and how this then grows into these monopolistic or monopolies on the use of force and coercion states. Something along those lines. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. But
Jason, does that sound all right with you?
Yeah, that makes sense. But then after that, I want to get back to the questions on morality because I really want to hear Henry's answers.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm done. I'm just trying to help lead us back to that.
Right.
So
what you're asking for is really one of the sections in my book, which is quite a few pages in length. How does theism play into the state is what you're basically saying. Why does the state grow out of theism? And the reason, the principle behind this really starts with the tribe, and that is you have to change the way individuals think. And this is done in childhood where the what I call the super concept is changed from a deistic God or the nature to the collective, so that it's what they believe, it's what they want, it's what they decree. You amputate the individual of his ability to look out and make decisions for himself based on his assessment of reality, and you have you create an individual that has to look to the elite of the tribe or the state to tell him what is true. And this goes to our concepts of morality, where you have to turn to an institution created in the tribe or in the state to tell you what is moral behavior. The deist or the hunter-gatherer that preceded tribalism didn't have to do that. He looked to reality. He evaluated what was the right course of action. He developed the non-aggression principle, and he had a very peaceful relationship with other human beings. And that's what morality is all about. It's how we relate to other human beings. It doesn't have much to do with how we relate to animals or non-animate objects. It's how we get along with other people. And
so now you've explained what morality is, Henry, and just I guess I could probably answer how you'd answer this question. Why do we need morality? I guess you'd say so we can, have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right?
That's right. That morality is necessary for us to pursue happiness if we're going to include other people. If we're going to live by ourselves as a mountain man, never see anybody, then we probably don't need morality because we're never going to be in a position to use it. But most of us, for our happiness, require other people, dealing with other people, trading with other people, having relationships with other people, and then we need a understanding of other people, and that's where morality comes in. And it's the need for relationships with other people, all the things that provides that creates the need for morality. And ordinarily, out of this need, you develop a child that's is in the real world, the deist world, develops a understanding of how he should relate with people by what he experiences. If he's gone through a brainwashing technique, religious schools and so forth to create a situation where he doesn't have this, then he's got to turn to the approved experts to give him a list of do's and don't do's. And that's mostly what we have in this particular time in our psychological evolution. We have to have experts in just about everything to help us navigate through our lives.
Tim, do you have anything to add at this point?
No, no, go for it.
Oh, well, so do you think that such a thing as moral training helps children, for example, to teach children to share? Is that a good thing or not?
Well, if you first destroyed their natural, normal, innate ability to develop morality, if you take a child and he's gone through this religious experience and he has a collectivist super concept now where he has to look out and get they to tell him what's real, yeah, he does need some guidance. He needs someone to tell him what to do and how to behave and so forth. Ideally, if people would stop traumatizing infants and children with their religious superstitions, none of that would be necessary. You would need morality for your mind any more than you need a pacemaker for your heart. If you have a normal heart and you have a normal mind, nature takes care of that just fine. The experience of being reared in a family and living in the real world and being allowed to interact with people, you will learn the non-aggression principle, which has also been expressed as the golden rule. Or a number of religions have phrased this different ways, but it's basically not the principle of not initiating force and being respectful of other people's property. Again, by property, I'm using the scientific definition of property, not the economic definition. And by the scientific definition of property, I mean the person's life, the person's mental derivatives, and then, of course, the person's physical derivatives, the things they may create, and so forth. If you seek voluntary association and voluntary exchange of these properties, then you have a non-violent society, a non-violent family, a non-violent life. If you seek to control people and make slaves of them by taking their property, then you have chaos and violence and aggression, all kinds of problems that we see in the world today. Every time they pass a law, they are passing a hostile, aggressive act against somebody. It may be the people that smoke marijuana. It may be the people who want to gamble. It may be the people who want to keep their homes. But the legislation has got some group that is being attacked, and what they're being attacked with is some effort to take their property away from them. And if you do that, you create people who are hostile to what you're doing. And we see all around the world all these different groups fighting whoever they think is the cause of it. But another point I'd like to make is this fighting never solves anything. That fighting doesn't create or doesn't solve any problem. The only way you solve problems is figuring out the cause. If you go out cause and effect without knowing what caused the problem, you're not going to find the answer to the problem. And so we have thousands, tens of thousands, millions of people fighting because they're unhappy with the way they've been treated. And we have just a few of us, like we here tonight, trying to figure out how we can make a happier, less violent, productive, voluntary world. And the answer to the problems are going to come from the few of us that are thinking about how to solve the problem and not from the ones who are busy throwing Molotov cocktails and blowing up hotels and airliners and this sort of thing. So
that's right. Hey, Jason, I've been asked if for us to take a break so we can do a station ID.
Sounds great.
All right. We'll have a.
All right, Deborah, hit the button.
You were born sinless. Your true freedom from sin is here. Declare your freedom from the myth of sin with your own personalized declaration of sinlessness and certification of sinlessness from the World Union of Deists now. Free your mind, body, and emotions with the irrefutable 11 reasons of the declaration of sinlessness. Enjoy life again. Live sin-free. No more groveling at the golden altars of revealed religionists who designed an imaginary disease just so they could sell you an imaginary cure. Both your personalized declaration of sinlessness and certification of sinlessness are printed in full color on high-quality parchment paper, shipped in their own black and gold frames, ready for immediate display. Help the World Union of Deists. Spread the light of reason and place your order now. Only $25 plus shipping from the World Union of Deists. www.deism.com. You'll be glad you did.
God's a big subject, and with us, anything goes. Irreverent or humble, have your say. We're the Future's Religious Talk Show in Blog Talk Religion.
Join Paul, Deborah, Rob, Timothy, Jason, Colleen, and more hosts.
Shows every week.
Visit GodDiscussion.net for info or call 914-338-0452. Talk, learn, share, think. The God Discussion Network.
Well, once again, this is Jason X here, along with my co-host Tim Wingate and Henry Jones. I am the Deputy Director of the World Union of Deists. We'd love to have you call in at 914-338-0452 or 888-238-8529. Please only use the 888 number for a quick phone call because it costs God Discussion more money than the 914 number. The World Union of Deists is an educational organization dedicated to teaching the world about deism so that humanity will be as sane, good, and happy as possible. Our website address is www.deism.com. That's www.deism.com. And if for some reason you call in and it doesn't work out, well, I guess that's the theme of the show today. I've had computer problems. What can you do? Well, anyways, so Henry was kind enough to define morality for us. I liked his definition. It was had a lot of 100% in it. He talked about why we need morality. And now I have another question for Henry. Henry, do you think we human beings are born good, evil, or neutral?
None of the above. We human beings are born with needs, and we are all about satisfying those needs. We use our main tool of survival is our cognition, our ability to think and reason. But unfortunately, reason is not perfect. Reason is a process, and we come up with right answers or wrong answers. The discovery of the scientific method has made reason tremendously more efficient and dependable. And this is really what has given us the tremendous world we have today with the Industrial Revolution, the Scientific Revolution, is the ability to apply the scientific method along with our reason to accomplish things. Now, morality ordinarily is a process of cognition. It is part of the learning and thinking process where an infant, a child is trying to satisfy their needs, they're dealing with other people, they're learning that if I take something from somebody, they might take something from me, and we might end up in a fight, and instead of enjoying something, I learned that it's better for me to treat people the way I wish to be treated, the golden rule of the non-aggression principle. And they learned the most important type of morality that we could possibly recommend. If, however, they are put into a school, they are brainwashed into a collectivist morality, which pretty much kills off or destroys this ability to develop their own morality, then they're like they're blind. They're morally blind. They are groping around, doing all kinds of things wrong, being a aggressive or violent. You can see, look at teenagers, look at the problems they go through. Well, naturally, you got to give them something, and so different organizations have created what you call a conceptual moralities, list of things you do and don't do, and various approaches to solving problems that are better than nothing in most cases, but it's better to have your natural sight than have a C&I dog, and the same goes with morality. Better to have your naturally developed cognition that deals with ethical issues and develops a natural morality. You're a whole lot better than having all of that amputated from your mind and then having to turn to some expert to give you a list of things to do and not to do and try to make it through the world like that. So that's my answer to your question. Is, are we good, bad, evil, or neutral? Is that we come out of the womb trying to satisfy our needs. We've been cut off from our lifeline, the umbilical cord. We're suddenly inundated with things like temperature that we didn't experience before. We're having to breathe on our own. We're having to eat on our own. And we start trying to figure out how to do all of this and how to figure all this and how to get along with all the people that we're coming into contact with, and we're learning things. And then if people come along and undo a lot of what we've learned and tell us that's wrong and do it this way and create this artificial creature, which is what the modern human being is, then yes, we've got to give them a list of do's and don'ts and try not to get involved in this and stay away from that and so forth. But many people, if they would just follow their own conscience, forget the morality and forget the laws as much as you can and not get in trouble, they'd be a lot better off, because they're unconscious, or their personal moral code that they have is much better than the one that they think is better than theirs and they're trying to follow.
And well, in some cases, for sure, that's true. I what comes to mind is Huckleberry Finn to me, where Huckleberry Finn was raised not following the morals of society, and one of the things society taught him was that slavery is good, and African Americans should be enslaved, and those who didn't support this position would go burn in hell forever. Huckleberry Finn faced a choice. He could either turn in the runaway slave Jim, who was his friend, or he could disobey society and in his mind go to burn in hell forever. And Huckleberry Finn made the choice to disobey society and, for the sake of his friend, help his friend flee to go to freedom. So I'd have to say that at least when it comes to unjust laws, one's moral conscience is often superior.
Yeah.
Tim, feel
and
free to jump in anytime.
I was gonna throw in something. Just as you know this, I know you do. The Huckleberry Finn story is the expression of Samuel Clemens's viewpoints. And Samuel Clemens has got a lot of material out there, especially dealing with these issues of, you know, harming others and doing the right thing. Have you ever read his war prayer, Jason?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. Do you have it right now?
No, I don't have it. It's too long to go into right now anyway. But I would look it up when you get a chance, The War Prayer by Mark Twain or Samuel Clemens, and it's done very tongue in cheek. It's a satire, going on about it, especially from the religious point of view. Especially, I can give you the short version, and that is, there's a congregation and there's a big parade and a lot of beating of drums, and people are celebrating some of their congregationalists going off to war. And the preacher gets up to make a sermon, and apparently some old prophet-like person appears on the stage. Oh, the preacher gives a big prayer and asks that God protects the army and protects the soldiers and makes them successful, and that they have a, you know, that they stay safe and that they're able to do their job well, and et cetera, et cetera. And so then this prophet guy comes up and says, well, God's heard your prayer, and he just wants to let you know that, yes, they're going to be able to kill a lot of people and cause all this misery and pain, and all this other suffering is going to be visited upon your enemy, et cetera, et cetera. The point of it, of course,
yeah,
pointing.
He's pretty brutal with it.
Yeah, he's pretty brutal with it. And it's a really, really excellent look at, well, you know, if you pray for your side to win, that means the other side loses. And especially when you're dealing with war and then trying to attach God to war. Well, warfare always has been one of the coercive means of the state to get what it wants. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong in certain circumstances, depending on, you know, this is where that relative thing comes in, depending on, you know, who and what and when and where and why. But it's something that's happened. We don't often think about it, and we're experiencing that today in our contemporary society, that there's many people in this country who are absolutely disheartened and sick and sad and angry that we have a president who, you know, mourns children being killed in our country but is ordering drone strikes on civilians in other countries. So, you know, and children being killed. So, you know, we have this contrast and this dilemma going on. But that's Samuel. I didn't really mean to get too far into that, because that's the war prayer by Samuel Clemens, and I just encourage anybody to just Google it. Well, don't Google it, because obviously Google is being watched. There's a few other search engines out there. But anyway, but
I
check out
read.
The – yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if anybody's heard about it, but you got to be careful of Google, because apparently they are watching it, and the family got SWAT team just this last week because the wife was looking up pressure cookers because she wanted to cook quinoa, and the husband later on used the computer to look up backpacks, and they got SWAT teamed to check and see if they had any insurgent material or that maybe they were domestic terrorists or something like that. It's, you know, you got to be careful on some of this stuff, because we don't know what crazies are now utilizing the technology of the day to suppress or to intimidate or to have a cooling effect on people's free speech and free inquiry. And that's one of the things we have to look at as far as the issue of morality. So all I wanted to say is that, you know, your example of Huckleberry Finn is a good one, but remember that came from Samuel Clemens, and Samuel Clemens has got a whole lot more along those same lines.
And also, Samuel Clemens was a deist. He based all of his beliefs on reason, and still concluded that God exists. He also was outspoken against what Henry Jones calls theism. That's what I call revealed religion, because they believe that God or someone like God revealed some truth that cannot be discovered through reason. You know, religions such as Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism. Well, anyways, Samuel Clemens, he wrote some marvelously scathing things about faith-based belief systems. So anything by Samuel Clemens I love. I even been to his gravesite.
Oh, okay. Well, I got a question for you, Jason.
Yeah.
If electricity comes from electrons, does that mean morality comes from morons?
I think Henry would say yes.
No,
which
say,
actually leads into the next question here. Henry, how is good morality acquired?
Well, by leaving children alone, by stopping this brainwashing with all these superstitions. One of the main superstitions being government and the state. These are superstitions. The superstition of theism, and the reason I use theism instead of religion is that you have just as much theism in communism and socialism and Nazism and
Henry,
these other,
could you define theism?
That's T-H-E-I-S-M, not D-E-I-S-M.
Right. Okay,
right.
Well, I'll just let me find that spot in my book, and I've already spent quite about a lot of
take your time, Henry.
Figuring that out. Okay.
Well, while you're doing that, I'm going to do my little blurb here. This is God Talk Radio again. And
okay.
Our particular program is called God Gave Us Reason, Not Religion. If you can, call in at 914-338-0452 or 888-238-8529. Henry, do you have that definition?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'm going to start out with religion. Religion is an institution which teaches and supports a narrative, an ideology, or theology. This institution of religion has an agenda. The agenda behind the religious curriculum is psychological modification. The purpose and mission of religion is to produce the collectivist or slave psychology. Superficially, one of the results of this is the tribe. And superficially, all tribes and all religions appear to be very different. But all tribes in their religion have the same fundamental generic bundle of religious concepts. This group of highly effective concepts forms the basis of all religions. These concepts form a curriculum that is called theism. This curriculum is made up of two stages. The first lesson that theism teaches is innate human evil, the doctrine of original sin. All religions and all theistic ideologies do this. They teach that the human being is basically defective, immoral, evil, and that the only way you can overcome this is through help from the collective, either through the tribe or the state. Various rituals have to be performed to make you to remove as much evil from you as they can, and to make you halfway presentable. Now, the second batch of religious of theistic concepts that are part of this curriculum is the concept of revelation. Revelation is the first concept that's actually taught to the child. And it's the belief that some people have direct access to God and receive special messages that can that he needs to know in order to survive, and that he'll have to maintain a relationship with the state and with those institutions that provide this information that's coming from God. The third lesson, the first being innate evil, then the second one is revelation. The third one is force. And the state is the embodiment of force, and the force is first taught by the compulsory nature of school itself. The child learns the very first day he goes to school of the absolute power of the tribe or the state. The compulsory requirement that he attend school says this loud and clear. He is under the rule of his slave parents, but they and he are under a greater power, the chief or the president or the shah or the czar or whatever. He learns now, if his family and if his parents failed to teach him earlier, that force is the method used by the collective to make him comply with the cycle modification that he's receiving. Force and fear become associated in his mind with tribal rule, and I go into some of the effects of that.
Go ahead, sir.
Including the force used in one's thinking, force becomes part of the psychoepistemology, of the theist. He can believe anything he can force in his mind. He doesn't have to rely on reason, the scientific method, evidence, facts, or anything. He can simply force it into his mind, and it becomes part of his belief system. lesson number four are the supernatural gods, and why they are important. They have to they're used to belittle the natural world. The natural world is portrayed as a tiny little part of the total universe. The supernatural gods control everything else, and that this tiny part is going to disappear very soon, and you're going to go to the hereafter and so forth. And why this is important in the psychology of the child. One of the reasons it's important is to show them that they are unable to receive this information. They can't see or understand the supernatural world, and they're made to believe that they must be defective. They can't understand this, and they have to, again, return to the elite clerics and so forth to advise them of this alternative universe. The lesson number five is the morality of redemption, where the way you purify yourself of all this evil is by doing good things for the tribe, by giving all your stuff to the ruling elite, by being a good slave, by obeying, by producing lots of stuff for the collective, by not being selfish and making sure they get their part, by self-sacrifice, in other words. Then the final aspect of the theist curriculum is the development of a punitive conscience. You can't, if you have a lot of slaves, you don't want to spend money on a lot of guards. You want the slave to guard himself, to monitor his own internal psychology, and to punish himself if he has unslave-like thoughts, like, I'd like to get the hell out of here and have a life of my own. Well, he's going to feel guilty and depressed, and many times slaves resort to suicide, where they kill themselves because they perceive themselves as being a poor slave. So that's really what theism is. It's a curriculum composed of the concepts of an medieval revelation for supernaturalism, human sacrifice, and a collectivist conscience. So it's a long way to answer your question, but that's what it is.
Well, that also that just reinforces what Samuel Clemens did in the War Prayer, and that is he tied together the issue of theism or the revealed religion supporting the state and using the same methodologies. And I find just amazing. Jason?
Well, the state or the tribe, the collective societal organization had to come into existence at the very same time that the collectivist super concept or the collectivist psychology came into effect. Because once you amputate the individual of his own cognition, then he's got to have the collective to support him. He can't go out there and survive on his own. Who's going to tell him whether the sun goes around the moon or the moon goes around the earth, or whether unhappy gods create disease or not? He's got to turn to the state or the tribal authorities to tell him everything, and whatever they tell him, for him, is the absolute truth. And so anybody comes along and tells you that the state or the tribe is what they're teaching is not true, you've got a major crisis for the societal organization.
For the organization. That's true. I've often had this definition on the difference in what to do, because morality ultimately deals with how we live and what we do. Morality is knowing and doing what is right, no matter what you are told. Religion is doing what you are told, no matter what is right.
Yes, I love that.
That's very succinct and profound.
Yeah, it is.
That's
unfortunately, where we are.
I was wondering, Henry, if you had any children, and if so, did you raise them by letting them, without giving them moral instruction?
Or did they voluntarily have to go out and cut a switch with which you were going to beat them?
Well, I had three natural sons. I adopted a 6.5-year-old girl, and then ended up raising two of my granddaughters. So I had three boys and then three girls, and we did not take them to church. We took them to church on a few occasions, special events, and so on. They knew what church was. I tried to teach them through examples. When things came up with me, my wife, or with one of them, we would all get together and talk about it and try to decide what was the best thing to do. Now, they have turned out to be all over the board. I have one granddaughter who is very religious and has a very religious husband, and I have another granddaughter who is a deist. I have a third granddaughter who is pretty much nothing, I don't believe. She has moved to, she married an Egyptian and is living in Egypt. Then my three sons, I think all three of them are deists. I think one of them doesn't know he's a deist. But I didn't exercise. I was pretty lazy. I didn't attempt to teach them a moral code. They got to observe how we solve the moral problems at the kitchen table, but that was perhaps not the best way to do it. I got married when I was 20, and I've been married 55 years, and first child was when I was 21, and all of these children were raised in, before I was well started, before 40 years old, and I've learned an awful lot since I was 40, so a lot of my ideas have changed since then. I'm sure if I had another life to lead, I would do it differently, but that's kind of the story there.
Well, what would you do if you had a child who was about, say, 8 years old and just wouldn't stop stealing stuff from the grocery store? How would you handle that?
Well, first of all, I think you have to have a real good talk with him and explain to him that if he is taking someone else's property, and how would he like if someone was taking his property? I think you have to personalize it. If you know who owns the grocery or the man's name, and so forth. You're doing this to Mr. So-and-so and so on. The next thing I would do is I would, when he came home with whatever he took, I would take him by the hand along with the objects, take him back to the store, meet with the man who owned the store, have him return the product, have him apologize, tell the man he was sorry, or whatever the situation was, and he wouldn't do it again. And I would just keep doing that. Every time he did it, back to the store we would go.
Well, that kind of seems to me like a little bit of moral instruction. You know, whether you're saying stealing is wrong or not, with your words, you're saying it with your actions.
Well, I don't have any problem with telling stealing is wrong. No, I would definitely tell him stealing is wrong.
Okay.
And is that in other words, you're dealing with a real problem that has developed. So I don't have any problem at all teaching moral instruction when it's obvious that it's needed.
I think actually you and I might agree a whole lot more than I was thinking at the beginning of the program. I think you and I want to maximize human freedom because we want to maximize human happiness, but we also want to have a society where people don't hurt each other.
Exactly.
Okay. And then maybe we'll quibble on, what's the best way to approach that, but overall our goal is the same.
Well,
yeah, and sometimes it's just differences in definitions.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. But also we have to realize in that definition that they have on the theist website, it says reason not religion, or something like that.
Yeah.
We have to recognize that reason can lead you to lots of different places and lots of different solutions, and that's why I brought up the scientific method. The scientific method helps you hone down on that, but it still doesn't guarantee you're going to come up with the perfect answer. So people who agree on the fundamentals of where they want to go and what kind of a world they want can end up with different answers to these questions. And so reason is great. It's all we have. The scientific method helps a lot. But the bottom line, we have to be civil and we have to discuss these things. We have to recognize that everybody's not going to agree with us, that we're trying, we're groping along, trying to find the best solution to problems that you know, it's been thousands of years and no one's done anything significant with these problems. And we're really in the forefront of trying to find solutions to these problems. So if anyone tells you they have absolute certainty that this is the right answer, I would be a little bit dubious about that. They may have, but I'm a little bit skeptical of...
Hello?
Yeah, we've got a caller here named Phil. I know Jason can't see the switchboard, but Phil had a question or comment for you folks, so I thought I'd put him in.
Deborah, yeah. You're the host. Go ahead.
Well, he's in.
Hi, Phil.
Yeah, I've been listening from more or less from the beginning, and the morality, as I understand it, is like one person or one group's judgment of somebody else's action. So a group, maybe a religion or a state or whatever, says, yeah, what you did is good, what you did is bad, and as such, I'm not too happy about even talking about morality.
Well, I guess I'll say a little bit and then Henry, keep on talking. I think that a lot has to do with definitions. Everyone has their idea of right and wrong. So honestly, I think that even if I lived on a deserted island by myself, I would have a sense of right and wrong. That'd be my morality. But I also think you're right, Philip, in that When a society gets together, that society can come up with its own idea of right and wrong, and not everyone in that society will agree with it. Henry, do you want to say anything?
I couldn't understand it. My reception was not that great. Could you kind of summarize his question or his comment?
Maybe Tim can do a better job than me. Tim?
Basically, he said that since wait a minute, is Phil gone?
No, I'm
Phil,
still here.
Phil, would you summarize what you had to say to Henry?
Yeah, okay, I'll try and put it. Let's take a one-on-one situation where one person looks at somebody else's actions, and that person might think the action is evil or wrong, whatever. So therefore, he labels it as immoral. But it's only one person, in that case, one person's judgment. And the whole thing of morality is one person or one group judging another person. And as such, it's not right. It's what right has any one person or group to judge another person and say your action was right or your action was wrong?
Well,
did you hear
that, Henry? I think it depends what your standards are. You see, for me, the way I would judge an action is, are you stealing the other person's property or not? If you're, if the situation is that two people are engaged in the exchange of property in a non-coercive, voluntary way, then it's their business and it's a moral action. So the way I would appraise an action from a moral standpoint is theft occurring, and of course theft by definition is coercive, then it is an immoral action.
Where do you think you've got this idea that theft is wrong? And I know that sounds a bit of a silly question, because I think we all believe that theft is wrong. But where did you get the concept that theft is wrong? And if that's too silly a question, take it to somewhere else, like gay relationships. Where would you get the belief or the authority to say that that is right or wrong?
Well, that's the result of a theism. Everyone.
Wait a minute, Henry. Hang on a second. I think what Philip is trying to ask is, you know, where does morality come from? Is there a immutable morality source that we can all agree on, or is it just up to individual judgments?
No. Morality is required by the fact that we are volitional beings, that is, we have choices, and we have to deal with other people, or we choose to deal with other people. If we didn't have choices, there would be no morality. If other people were not involved, there would be no need for morality. Morality is that group of concepts that we have to develop through our cognition to help us deal with other people and to deal with them fairly. So
basically you're saying, Henry, that morality is the very nature of human interaction in society.
Yes. That's right.
Human okay, Phil, does that help?
Yes.
You're breaking up a little bit, Phil, and we're about out of time, aren't we, Jason?
Yes, we've only got, Jason, can you wrap it up for, a minute? We're down to, our last minute here.
All right. Well, let me say this to Philip and everyone else. I'm hoping to continue this discussion next month, the first Monday of the month. Hopefully everything will go smoother. I really want to thank Dr. Henry Jones for being with us. He provided a lot of great ideas and thought-provoking ideas. I want to thank Tim Wingate as well. I want to thank Philip for calling and Deborah for stepping up and kind of hosting this whole thing. Feel free to email me at jason@deism.com. That's J-A-Y-S-O-N at D-E-I-S-M.com. Please join us again on the first Monday of every month at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central Time, 7 p.m. Mountain Time, and 6 p.m. Pacific Time. And remember that God gave us reason, not religion.
Excellent. And Dr. Jones, thank you so much for joining
us
tonight.
Yes,
And thank you, Jason, Tim, Rob. I mean, you guys did great, and great call, Phil. So, all right. Well, we'll talk to you guys next time.
Great.
Thanks, Deborah.
Hope you enjoyed this presentation. To learn more about deism, please visit www.deism.com. That's deism.com. And visit goddiscussion.com for the latest church and state news, articles, and opinions. The comments and opinions in this broadcast are respected, but do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of other hosts, guests, and/or goddiscussion.com.
In a world where a frightening number of Americans think that man coexisted with dinosaurs 6,000 years ago, where church and state are headed for a collision course. You've got one new source that covers it all. GodDiscussion.com. Go there, comment, bookmark it, spread the word, engage. GodDiscussion.com.